So, lecture 26, November 30th, I guess December Eve, as it were. December's almost here. Lecture notes, page 244. The drive to help animals is still going on. So, I've checked the overall participation on the student evaluations. We've got 16% of the class doing it so far. That adds 0.08%. Y'all could, Webbies, you paying attention? Y'all could do a little better than that. So let's boost that up. Even if your grade is already an A and you don't need any more points, help those people who are on the margin and need an extra 0.5%. So when you get a chance, click on the website or your flash survey link and do the course evaluation, the class evaluation, and help everyone add extra credit points and help me see what your opinion of the course is. Yeah? I mislisted the remaining course material on Monday, so here I updated it as I did on the last email to you. So chapter 17 we're skipping for now, probably permanently. We're going to do 18, 19, and 20. We'll see how it goes, and that'll take us up to finals. So we'll see how we get through the material. Test 12 closes on Thursday because of the Thanksgiving break. Test 13 opens Thursday, that's tomorrow, and will close on Tuesday. And then there's a mini test 14 review only test that will cover the material that isn't on the mini test 13. So anything that happens after, how are we doing this? 12, 13 will open tomorrow. So we'll have some material that's left over next week, and I'll open that up for you to study in review test 14, and then we'll have the finals exam coming up. In answering extra credit, number 9, also packback number 9, closed tonight, and 10 will open up Thursday and run through Wednesday. So we miss out on the excitement of Super Bowl commercials because they aren't releasing them as early as they used to. But here's a general statement on Super Bowl. How many of you guys watch the Super Bowl? How many of you guys watch it for the commercials, not the game? Yes, some of us do. So what's going on with Super Bowl 2023? Super Bowl ad plans are starting to take shape with brands including DraftKings and Molson Coors announcing their big game day ad buys. So some promotion strategy out there. Fox, which will air the game on February 12, 2023, announced in September that it was nearly sold out of commercial inventory in the game, so there's a demand in a B2B world for ad space. Some brands are spending as much as $7 million for a 30-second spot. That's up from an average spend of $6.5 million this year. But those that invest in major sponsorships across Fox's portfolio pay closer to the low end of low and mid $6 million for a 30-second ad, which is consistent with the price for 2022. So there's ad cost, ad budget, sponsorship perks, a reduced cost. The biggest change to the 2023 Super Bowl ad game so far is the decision by Anheuser-Busch to give up its exclusive sponsorship rights. For years and years and years and years, the only beer ad you would see would be for Budweiser. And they've given up their exclusive sponsorship rights. This opens up the game to other beer brands that have historically been unable to buy commercial time in the game, including Molson's Coors, which quickly announced it would air an ad in the game. So a bit of promotion strategy there. DraftKings will return to Super Bowl with its third consecutive ad. It will air one 30-second commercial starring Kevin Hart. Molson's Coors bought its first Super Bowl ad because they weren't able to ever do it before since Anheuser-Busch gave up its exclusive rights. It's going to air one 30-second commercial. And of all things, the Servant Christian Foundation will make its Super Bowl debut with one 30-second ad and one 60-second ad. The He Gets Us campaign, which launched last year to rebrand Jesus, will come to the game. I didn't know Jesus needed rebranding, but apparently he does. So here's your chance to see how we rebrand Jesus. The He Gets Us Super Bowl spots will explore how the teachings and example of Jesus demonstrate that radical love, generosity, and kindness have the power to change the world. So We are doing rebranding and idea marketing with this new advertiser on the Super Bowl. So stay tuned for the big game. I wasn't going to do more than one of these because I was trying to get through material, but I can't resist giving an update on how did Cyber Monday go. Shoppers clicked the buy button with abandon on Cyber Monday, racking up $11.3 billion in online sales. That represents a 5.8% year-over-year gain from last year and makes November 22nd, 2022, the biggest online shopping day of all time. So if you bought something online, you participated. A bit about consumer demand in the face of course, inflation and looming recession. We're still out there spending our money. Adobe Analytics explained that heavy discounting helped drive the buying spree, even as rising costs and fading consumer sentiment sowed doubt about the holiday season, but it turned out. So here's retail price strategy doing heavy discounting. While this does not bode well for retailers' profit margins, it was the fuel for the holiday shopping fire. So we can think about how retailers view elasticity of demand, drop prices in order to drive up demand. But of course, then that cuts into our profit, since profit is revenue minus costs, and reduced price reduces our revenue, cutting into our profit. So la-di-da, there's Cyber Monday. All right, so up, pick up with lecture notes 244 and page 484 in the textbook, which is going to be the start of chapter 18, skipping over 17, as I mentioned. So integrated marketing communications and direct marketing, chapter 18, lecture notes, page 4. I have 245, whatever, 245, 246, like that. We're back one more time to our overview of marketing and where we are. We started at the 30,000-foot level down to the 10,000-foot level. We've talked about products, pricing, distribution, and now we're into promotion as the marketing program develops to get a market response. Sales. So the four P's one more time, product, price, place, and finally the fourth P, promotion, with, as always, the consumer at the center of our focus, I hope. GEICO has done a pretty good job in promoting its brand starting a long time ago. It was founded in 1936. It targeted government employees and military non-commissioned officers. In the day, it was direct marketed to those folks with no agents. And they used direct mail and telephone sales for 60 years. So it worked pretty well for them up till that time period. In 1994 and 1995, they decided to expand their target market. So to expand your target market, of course, you have to expand your marketing to get your reach out to a new set of consumers. Yeah? So, 1995... for the first time, they spent $10 million on their first national TV, radio, and print ads to grow their market. And in 96, you've heard of Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett buys the company. And he says to the marketers, hey, you got to move more quickly, grow the company faster. So by 2006, the ad budget was more than $500 million. Obviously, Warren Buffett and the company felt that to grow the consumer base, they had to do a lot of advertising, a lot of marketing, get the word out. So as it grew, it became apparent, an interesting problem, that consumers had trouble remembering and saying the name GEICO. The smaller user base before, the military folk knew what it stood for, government employee insurance company. But as they grew, people started saying GEICO. It's not really good when your consumers don't know your brand name. That's not a good thing. So they were thinking, how are we going to differentiate this? And the company tried a temporary campaign. This was just going to be for a little while to get people to understand that they were GEICO, not Gecko. Oh,
okay. Gecko. This is my final plea. I am a Gecko, not to be confused with GEICO, which could save you hundreds on car insurance. So stop calling me GEICO. A 15-minute call could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I didn't want mail.
You don't have to sacrifice service to save money. GEICO. A 15-minute call could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
So first they run the Gecko. The Gecko is very popular. People want more of him. And it's a new way of getting an idea about an insurance company. Humor. Not a common thing at the time to talk about an insurance company. So then they start with some other humorous ads. But their tagline, which you can still often hear today, a 15-minute call can save you 15% more on car insurance, sticks around. So they're beginning to have some impact, but people really like the Gecko. So
tell me in your own words a little bit about GEICO.
Well, it's one-stop shopping, really, GEICO.com. You can get a free rate quote. You could compare coverage options. You could file a claim, pay your bill online. Even, you know, have a little chat with an associate if you need help.
What about you? Can they chat with you?
I'm here for GEICO, love. Let's not delve into my personal life, hey?
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
So again, a bit of humor, and you know, he's still around today. His voice has changed, his accent has changed, his animation has changed, but he's still reminding us of these facts. So the lizard stayed, but more was needed. GEICO wanted to draw in younger consumers, and it wanted consumers to realize that the then new GEICO.com was simple to use. So how are we going to do that? Well, they come up with another humorous idea. The GEICO caveman with their tagline, so easy, even a caveman could do it. A little bit of humor. Anybody actually remember the caveman guy? All right, so here we go.
It's so easy to use GEICO.com, a caveman could do it.
What?
Not cool.
I did not know you were there. I didn't know I could say...
It's so easy to use GEICO.com, a caveman could do it.
What's that supposed to mean? Do you know?
That is really condescending.
How could it be offensive if it's true?
Okay, first of all, I'm not 100% in love with your tone right now.
Tone aside, historically, you guys have struggled to adapt.
Yeah, right. Walking upright, discovering fire, inventing the wheel, laying the foundation for all mankind. You're right. Good point. Sorry we couldn't get that to you sooner.
Connie, your reaction?
Sounds like someone woke up on the wrong side of the rock.
Ouch. So they continue with interesting, humorous stuff to grab people's attention. M&M's, GEICO combined for a delicious ad mashup. Ms. Brown from M&M's and the Gecko and a surprise guest in this ad. Maybe you remember it.
Yes, I understand the fact that being made out of delicious chocolate makes me high risk for insurance companies, but I still believe I deserve coverage. And furthermore, I have been here for 15 minutes, which means, well, you know.
GEICO only insures humans. Insuring a delicious piece of chocolate? I'd lose my job for that. And then what would I do?
Woo-hoo! Guess what day it is!
Save it, hump boy.
So I don't know if you remember that or not, but it was out a little while ago. And so we say... she wants insurance, much to the dismay of GEICO's geckos. Clearly read the handbook on providing coverage to candy. The edible are not eligible. There's a cameo by the third character, the camel. Additionally, a social media campaign on Facebook and Twitter tells the larger story of Miss Brown's efforts to secure insurance. Lots of people claim to dislike advertising, but just as brand-on-brand Twitter banner is quite entertaining, the odd little feeling of delight you get as you watch Ms. Brown and the gecko proves yet again that try as you might, you can't actually resist brand advertising at all. Well, maybe. So, they've done a good job promoting their brand and growing the brand and getting people to be aware of their name and how to say it. But what is promotion? Well, promotion is communication. If you recall, a long time ago, we talked about the criteria for a good market segment. And one is that it is reachable. Yes, reachable physically with product, but reachable with your message. Promotion, then, is one way that we can reach this segment with communication so they know what we are, who we are, how to buy us, why they would want us, etc. Promotion is, of course, one of the P's in the marketing mix. To confuse you, we also use the word mix to refer to the elements used by marketers in promotion. So we have the marketing mix, and then, of course, we have the promotional mix, just to complicate things for you. The promotional mix consists of the tools that marketers use to accomplish the organization's communications objective, to talk to the consumer about the company. The traditional roles of the promotional mix include inform prospective buyers about the existence of and benefits of the brand. We don't buy things we aren't aware of, duh, and then we don't buy things that we don't know what they are, what the benefits are. to persuade them to try it. We're here. Here's what we offer. Here's why you should buy us. And if we've been around for quite a while, we also use promotion to remind them about the benefits that they enjoyed by using the product. You bought me for a long time. Keep me in mind when you need to get another one because you've been satisfied with whatever brand I am. So, basic, inform, persuade, and remind are the traditional roles of the promotional mix. These days, because we're in a new era, we also use communication to build relationships with our consumers. We want you to be part of our family, part of our fan club, part of our Twitter feed, etc. We want to have a relationship with you. So that's relatively new. What are our information? When we want to inform consumers, what do we inform them of? Well, we want to communicate the value. Remember, after all, marketing is an attempt to provide value to consumers. What's our value? We want to build a brand or a company image. So who are we? What do we represent? Are we branding? Are we rebranding? Explain how the product works in order to make sure that you know what the thing is. Suggest new uses for a product. We've been around a while, but we now do this thing. Let you know about the existence of a new product. You aren't buying something that you don't know about. Describe the services and support that you can get from us. All of these things are informing you. And sometimes, of course, competition or some website or some Twitter feed or some reviewer will put out information that just isn't right, isn't true. So we might need to inform you of what's actually correct. So we want to correct false or misleading statements. Here's an example of informing prospective buyers of a new product when it was coming out. How many of you guys know Mio Liquid Water Enhancers? Anybody ever see that? Oh, you know them. All right. So pocket-sized packets of super concentrated syrups didn't even exist until Kraft Foods Group introduced Mio Liquid Water Enhancers in March 2011. By the end of 2013, the U.S. market alone was worth $412 million with dedicated fixtures in many stores, part of Kraft Foods Group's plan of fewer, bigger, better launches. Mio capitalized on the customization trend, drawing a copycat launch from the likes of Coca-Cola's and Dasani. And here they are on the web, Mio. So here's the story. I'm a new product. What am I? How do I work? What's in the product? And here was the introduction ad for it to communicate.
If you're somebody struggling to coordinate various different teams, Asana is that one tool that brings it all together. You get clarity on what needs to be done next. You can collaborate on all that work together, and then you could see it take off. That's the
way I like it. Introducing Mio, a revolutionary liquid water enhancer. Add a little. Add a lot. For a drink that's just the way you like it. Make it yours. Make it Mio.
Zero calories, add a little, add a lot, carry it around with you. We're introducing all of these benefits to you from this product. All right, so now what they know it is, we want to persuade them to try it. A little persuasion humor. Mom, they say on TV that Sudsy Wudsy is the best soap. That's just advertising, Dot, says Mom. Everybody advertises that their soap is the best. Then how do you know which soap really is the best? You don't. You just buy the one with the best ad. Yes, Mom. So a little advertising humor. Never mind. Persuasion goals include to build preference for your brand. Persuade people that your brand is the best value for them. Encourage switching to your brand. The detergent you've been using isn't as fill in the blank, soft, strong, good smelling. Change consumers' perceptions of the product value. Sure, we're a little more expensive, but you're worth it. Get consumers to buy now. Hurry up, the sale's going to end on Friday. Convince consumers to tell others about the brand. So these are all different persuasion goals you might have depending on, well, your current communication strategy. I do like this ad, persuading the woman in the guy's life to think about getting this product.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on a boat with the man your man could smell like. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's an oyster with two tickets to that thing you love. Look again. The tickets are now diamonds. Anything is possible when your man smells like Old Spice and not a lady. I'm on a horse.
Entirely silly, but also getting attention and maybe convincing some people to try Old Spice. Reminder ads. You've been around for a long time. You know the brand. So we want to maintain relationships with our customer. Hey, thanks for being, our customer. We still love you. Remind consumers they may soon need the product. I was talking about my ink the other day. As soon as my printer starts getting low, it starts reminding me I want to get high-quality ink of their brand. Remind consumers where the product's available. Keep the brand in the consumer's mind during the off-season, so when it rolls around to be time to buy cranberries, they're thinking of that brand of cranberries. So they're on. Periodically, you do see things advertised out of season. You say, why? We want you to remember us when it's important. If a product's really mature, again, you're not introducing it. They know who you are. You want to make sure that they have some reason to continue buying your product. So this does nothing except remind us about the brand. Thing tells us nothing new about the brand, nothing we didn't know, just a reminder, hey, we're still out there, a little emotional tease there. You guys know the product Pine Sol? Do people know Pine Sol? Do your moms maybe have it at home? Anybody, do you know if any of your moms have it in different scents? Different, yeah? This is actually an interesting thing. It's a cleaner. What do you mean you have different scents for the cleaner? They got thinking about this old mature product and they said, what else sells based on scent? Perfume. What if we made an ad for Pine Sol that played on the idea of a romantic perfume ad? Up to the bedroom.
That's the power of Pine Sol, baby.
Intensity, the scent of real clean. So the Pine Sol brand spent $18.9 million on advertising that year, $10.8 million in the first 6 months of the next year. The Heritage Pine scent remains the biggest seller, followed by Lemon. The idea that our scent is proof of a job well done. As for the latest campaign, Mr. Mercier said, the object was more to highlight the scent of the products than to satirize men's unlikelihood to be cleaning the floor. What we're trying to do here is play on the fantasy of perfume ads, which have a strong romance element. In the spot, Ms. Diane Amos inhales rapturously with her eyes closed before even noticing the man doing the cleaning. So again, nothing really new here, just a reminder that we're out there. Keep us in mind. So communication is what we're trying to do. Communication is the process of conveying a message to others. And it sounds simple, but of course it's not. And marketers don't always get the fact that it's not. So here is something I'm communicating to you. Can you see it in the back okay? Can you see it okay? So I assume I'm doing a good job. You can see it. So I'm doing okay. You got it? So no problems on what it says, yeah? So, of course, who can read it for me? You can see it. What do you mean you can't read it? Well, this is obviously an extreme case of people not getting the fact that communication can be hard. It says, friends come from far away. Isn't it a happy thing in life? By Confucius. But you don't read Chinese. Most of us don't read Chinese. Sometimes we put out ads in languages that don't make in a phrase, in a words, in a level that doesn't make sense to our consumers. And marketers find that problem all the time. So the key elements here are the source of the communication. From our perspective, who is the source of most communications we'd be talking about? Who's the source? The brand, thank you. The company, the manufacturer, the brand, the retailer trying to get the message out, yeah? So it's the person, group, or organization with a meaning that it intends to share with the audience. I did not do a good job of communicating the meaning on the previous slide. It could be a salesperson communicating one-on-one with a customer in a store or in a business. It could be a whole organization that wants to communicate with thousands or millions of people. In both cases, we're trying to communicate something, a message, with either one-on-one or mass communication. The receiver, we hope, is the person or group which gets the information, decodes it. The problem is that sometimes the actual receiver, the actual audience, is not the intended one. They aren't the same. I send out a message over television to you guys because you guys watch the show. But, of course, other guys are watching the show, too. So you see the message, and then they say, well, what are you doing? Why are you saying that? I didn't intend it for you. I meant it for you. So our message may not reach our intended audience. That's even worse than it reaching other people. Or it may be received by our audience and others we did not intend to reach. What do you mean you are a inexpensive brand? I thought you were a quality brand. Well, for this group, I'm inexpensive. For that group, I'm quality. Encoding the message. The coding of a message is the idea of taking what we want to communicate and putting it into signs and symbols and words and sounds that represent the ideas and the concepts of the communication. So we use sensory stimuli, words, symbols, images. We use sounds, spoken words, sound effects, music, scents, fragrances to convey the message, which can be tricky. I don't think we talked about this example of not understanding things cross-culturally. If you saw a group of Japanese dressed in white in a group gathering, what would you assume was going on? Thinking about what we would see if we saw a bunch of people dressed in white, a woman dressed in white. Would you think of a wedding, sort of? In Japan, white is the color of mourning. You're at a funeral, not at a wedding. Whoops, I didn't communicate what I meant to very well when I put that motto out there in white in a Japanese ad, if you see the point. So getting the right words, symbols, sounds, fragrances to communicate your message can be tricky. David Ogilvy is a guru in the area of marketing. He says, look, talk to your audience the same way you would talk to a close friend that's sitting in the chair in front of you. Don't address your readers, he's talking about a print ad, as though they were gathered together in a stadium. When people read your copy, print ad copy, they're alone. Pretend you're writing to each of them a letter personally. Communicate with them individually the way you would talk to them if they were sitting next to you. The message itself is what's sent through some channel of communication from the source to the receiver. So it's the thing that is encoded, whether it's in print or music or sound or visual, whatever it is. Channel communication is the medium that we use to convey the message from the source to the audience. What sorts of media do we use? Well, The internet, television, radio, prints and magazines, print and newspapers, mail, billboards, salespeople. All of these are channels of communication. Which one is right for you? I don't know. Who's your target audience? What magazines do they read? Do they read magazines at all? What TV stations do they watch or streaming? The wrong channel won't reach the intended audience. So if you don't understand your consumer really well, you don't know their media consumption habits, you're not going to reach it. We asked this question, I think, earlier, so we'll ask it again. Maybe we'll ask it another time. It doesn't matter. How many of you guys listen to country music stations or country music, period? Pop? Rock? Okay, so if I want to reach you and I say, hey, they're probably into country. Not. Whoops, that message didn't get to y'all. So who is your target audience and how do you reach them? The target audience in the upper left, you would guess, is probably not really into pop music, right? Here we have sort of a family orientation. Here we have young folks with a diverse population. And here we have really young people. How are you reaching each of those people? What are their media consumption habits? Decoding of the message. Decoding process is used by the receivers to convert the signs and symbols into concepts, ideas, and meaning. You guys didn't do a good job of decoding my first slide, did ya? That's because I didn't do a very good job of encoding it for you. But you made no sense out of it. Does your message, as you put it out in the internet, on video, on audio, make sense to the consumer? Rarely does the audience get the same meaning as you intended. They interpret things. Remember, we talked about perception and how you build perception based on your own needs, wants, and desires. So the key takeaway for marketers is it's not what you think, marketer. It's what they think. What does your consumer think after you've sent them this message? That's the key thing. Part of the problem is an issue called fields of experience. Effective communication requires that the sender, the marketer, and the receiver, the consumer, have shared knowledge and understanding of words, of symbols, of culture, and their meaning. What was the problem in my first slide? You don't know Chinese. We don't have overlapping fields of experience here. So if you don't have overlapping fields of experience, a common understanding of words, symbols, culture, and their meaning, communication is likely to be ineffective or misinterpreted. You put all that money into that thing, and that's the message you got across? Really? That's not what you wanted. So noise occurs when we do communication. Noise is anything that reduces the clarity, the accuracy, the effectiveness of the communication, which we have to be aware of, we have to think about. So there are lots of sources of noise. There could be a problem with the medium. We get radio static, so we don't hear the music, we don't hear the ad. You could say, well, how many people use Sirius XM radio? You get a direct broadcast from a satellite. Nobody? Well, there's no radio static there, but you go under a tunnel or you go under a bridge and it may cut out on you. The satellite may cut out. Well, that might be when my message is playing. The internet or website's down. How many of you guys have gotten an internet site that won't load for you? Wait a minute, I'm trying to get. No, not good. Faulty printing of the ad. They misprint the color. They misprint information, the date, the price. These are all sources of noise. Remember the moonwalking bear? He was there. But I interfered with your perception of him by focusing your attention on the number of ball tosses, right? That was noise, given if what I wanted you to notice was the bear. It can also occur in problems of encoding. So the concept is not well understood by the encoder. Sometimes you, marketer, are the encoder, but oftentimes you hire in an ad agency, an outside person, and they don't get the basic idea that you want to send. So the message comes out wrong. I think I mentioned a few times that 100 years ago I worked for a microwave appliance firm that also sold microwave ovens. They wanted to get across this idea that our microwaves were really big. This is still in a day when people were worried about microwaves and were they going to poison them and make them infertile and stuff. People didn't quite get microwaves yet. But they created an ad to show how big the thing was. They showed a guy with his head inside a microwave, looking all around at how big it was. And I'm thinking, people don't trust radiation right now. And now you're showing a guy's head inside the microwave. Is that really what you want people thinking about? I didn't think they encoded that message very well. When inappropriate symbols are selected, you use the wrong word, use inappropriate music, you have poor choice of spokesperson given the target audience, use language that's too technical or too simple. You ever see an ad and when you're all done, you don't know what they just said? You don't get it? It's like, what? That probably wasn't an effectively encoded advertisement. They have noise. And it can occur when there's problems with the receiver. We know from selective exposure, if the message is unpleasant or unwanted, the receiver can consciously or unconsciously blocks all or part of your message. And so you are not communicating effectively. They're blocking you out. They don't like what your message is. Response is the impact the message has on the receiver's knowledge, if that's what you're shooting for. Oh, you exist. Oh, here's what your values, your benefits are. On their attitudes, I sort of like you. That's interesting, now that I know about you. Their behaviors, I think I'll go by you. I'll give you a try. And so we're hoping, you know, you're getting the response that you're planning for, whether it's knowledge about the brand, attitude about the brand, behaviors relevant to the product, that our communication is effective. And then you have feedback. This would be the sender's interpretation. That's stupid. That would be the, line that out, the receiver's interpretation of the response, which indicates whether a message was decoded and understood by the receiver as intended. Yes, so did they get it is the point. Whatever it was you were trying to communicate. So here it is over all the sources encoding a message, hopefully with a common field of experience with the receiver. It gets sent through a channel of communication, it being the message. There's noise in there, so you have to be, as a marketer, aware of what that noise might be. Consumers have to decode what you've encoded using the proper interpretation of your signs, symbols, words, colors, spokespeople. They give a response, change of attitudes, change of knowledge, buying the product, we get the feedback loop back to the source. Did it work out for you? Was it a good job? Did you communicate effectively? So what are our tools that we have to communicate to the consumer? The tools in the promotional mix. Those are advertising, public relations, sales promotion, personal selling, and direct marketing. So let's take a dive a bit. We'll do it more detail later. So let's think about it in terms of integrated marketing communications. So integrated marketing communications is the concept of designing marketing communication programs that coordinate all of these tools, all of these promotional activities, advertising, personal selling, sales promotion, public relations, direct marketing, to provide a consistent message across all the pertinent audiences. I have a jillion different messages out there. I have a jillion different people watching them. If I don't send out a consistent integrated message, people don't know what I am. They don't know what to believe from me. I'm the marketer, and I'm not being consistent, which is, of course, a problem. So consumers are bombarded, as you know, with commercial messages. If you're doing social media, do you see an occasional commercial message? If you're streaming, if you listen to the radio, if you're watching TV, messages, messages, messages. And from a consumer's viewpoint, any message from you is one message. Is it all consistent or is it all monkeyed up? If you don't integrate your message, the various messages create a confusing and mixed image in the consumer's mind. Why would somebody buy you when they don't know if you're high quality, low quality, for people like them, for young people, for old people? I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're doing. Why would I buy you? Not a good way to go. Does anybody know Sterling Jewelers for any reason? So they're big in Ohio, although they were bought out a while ago by Signet Jewelers. Welcome to Sterling Jewelers, the largest specialty retail jeweler in the country with 1,414 stores, 50 states, including the nationally recognized brands K Jewelers. We know K Jewelers, right? And Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry. Those brands are under Sterling. It was named one of the top companies to work for in Northeast Ohio. This example was brought to me by one of my EMBA students who worked there. He said, this was a while ago, and he said, we were dealing with an economic slowdown. And we had to think about what are we going to do to our consumers, for our consumers, to attract people into our stores given there's an economic slowdown. He said, in general, at the time, they were very price point driven, which was one approach, but they decided to spice up their categories rather than try to drop prices further. So they came up with some new products they thought would appeal to people, including trendy, fashion-forward items at lower price points. They made some timeless looks more affordable for those price-sensitive consumers. But their really big find at the time, on the other end, they expanded their assortment of Levion jewelry. It's a very successful upper-scale line of jewelry, so they're trying to deal with this issue. But the most important initiative was the Open Hearts Collection by Jane Seymour. Does anybody know that phrase or that name, brand name, the Open Hearts Collection? Does anybody know Jane Seymour? Perhaps I need to change the example. But for them, this was really a successful situation. The Jane Seymour was a well-known actress, and she had been doing some artwork dealing with love, the open heart theme of love. And they picked up on her idea and said, hey, would you do something for our collection? So it played on her love theme, her popularity at the time. And they said, how are we going to communicate this new line out to people? So they developed a series of beautiful displays for the product in their many, many retail stores. They had literal informational brochures that explained Jane and her thoughts about open heart, the Open Heart Collection. They had DVDs playing on continuous loops in the store so people could see it. They ran Jane in a K's commercial. How many of you guys know the show My Name is Earl? Okay. So they had her in an episode of My Name is Earl where his wife was dreaming about shopping and she was dreaming about open hearts from Jane Seymour in the cartoon. And when she wakes up on the TV screen is Jane Seymour. And the first ad after that segment was an ad for the Jane Seymour collection. They also did an item on Hallmark Channel and with Kate Jewelers. They hosted an online sweepstakes. They offered the chance to win one of the Open Hearts by Jane Seymour diamond necklaces. Kate Jewelers placed in-store displays in 909 stores located across the country, featuring tune-in information on the then premiere of Dear Prudence that Jane was in. And they had a PR piece. They had a press release letting people know about this new collection. Now that's an integrated marketing communication. Many, many items through many channels doing many things, including My Name is Earl, pulling together to talk about this new product for the consumer. So, as you think about getting this message out, you have to think about how you're going to do it. And one of the things you got to think about is the budget that you have. Your budget is going to influence your promotional mix. Duh. If you have a limited budget, many times the way to go is through personal selling. It's easy to measure the effectiveness of a personal selling effort. It costs less than running a major television, radio, internet ad campaign. A sizable budget is a happy problem. Here you need to decide which tools are best for your situation. You don't want to waste dollars. Entrepreneurs often have a limited budget. They may have to engage in personal selling. Working for a corporation, you have to decide what's best for you. The objectives you have is going to influence your promotional mix. You want to create mass awareness for a breakfast cereal. Is personal sales the way to go? How many consumers are there? 300 million? Hi, would you like to talk about cereal today? No. Hi, I'd like to tell you about that's selling, right? So you're probably going to use advertising, some sales promotions, something that would get people involved in the product. Some publicity, if there's something really new and interesting about it that people would want to be talking about. If you want to educate consumers about some new mobile phone, here you might run moderate advertising and some sales promotion and have in those stores, you have your own store, or in the kiosks in the mall, if you can get people out to the mall, significant personal selling to educate consumers about these new mobile phone features. Anybody get the new iPhone yet? The latest one? Did you notice in the new iPhone, I don't know if they really emphasize this new feature or not, maybe we talked about it. If you're out offline, off the grid, they have an emergency button that you can push that talks to a satellite, man, and sends a signal out. Did they emphasize that as a selling point?
A little bit.
Okay. It's a special segment of the marketplace that might care about that, but there's a new feature that they might talk to you about. Produce immediate sales. Well, then, you probably want to use some advertising, some sales promotion to get people really interested, really involved with the thing. So there's some sort of contest, there's some sort of sweepstakes, there's a two-for-one deal, there's a giveaway of a T-shirt, whatever. Get people involved to get immediate sales. Your target audience will influence the mix as well. Are you selling to a really massive audience or to a small audience? The bigger the audience suggests that you would use advertising and sales promotion to reach those really large number of people. If it's more limited, as you often have in a B2B world, you're only selling to a few hundred companies or less. You don't need to do all of that. You have personal selling, calling on those small number of companies with your message. What about geographic distribution? Well, again, if everybody's concentrated together, maybe you're able to do personal selling as your main promotional tool. If they're dispersed all over the place, not going to work. You're going to have to use some form of advertising to reach out to them. So you can see it's fairly complicated. Let's add into that a concept we know about, the product life cycle. Yeah? Here's an example for a product, Dog Chow. In the introduction stage of the product life cycle, nobody knows who you are, what benefits you offer, what value you have. They don't know anything. So what's our goal then? To inform consumers about this new product. So if it's really interesting enough, maybe we can get some publicity in veterinary magazines, run some advertising wherever our target market is, get the sales force calling on the channel members to have them carry our new Dog Chow, and get sales promotion in the forms of free samples. Maybe, I haven't seen it too much recently, but in the old days you could see free samples attached to the Sunday newspaper on their outside wrapper, and you'd get a free sample of whatever the thing was. Then you could do something like that. You begin to grow. You're out there. People are buying your product a little bit, so now you want to persuade them to buy your brand over the competition. So now maybe reinforce, you grow your personal selling effort to those intermediaries, and you advertise to differentiate Dog Chow and its attributes from all of those competing brands out there to get consumers to understand the value and to grow. You've been around a while. People know who you are. You're in the mature stage of the product life cycle. You just want to remind people that you're there, so use, well, oh, I see I'm going to have some pop-ups here, to inform, to build awareness in the introductory stage of the product life cycle. To fight competition in the growth stage, you're going to use persuasion advertising. And in the maturity stage, if you want to remind them, you'll use reminder advertising. So sales promotion in the form of discounts and coupons, some limited personal selling. Those that are carrying you. You probably aren't going to grow too many more retail outlets. And direct mail reminders, hey, you know who we are. Don't forget us. And then the decline stage of the product life cycle. You're probably not going to spend too much money on advertising. You're going to focus on other ways to become efficient. So your ad goals and budget are also influenced by the stage of the product life cycle. The product itself will influence your promotional strategy. Industrial products tend to use personal selling with supports from ads, some sales promotion to those B2B buyers. Consumer products, their strategy will vary depending on their complexity. In general, durable goods tend to use personal selling. If you're going to go buy, although the internet has messed with this concept, but still in general, if you're buying a refrigerator, a stove, a car, there's still a lot of personal selling that goes on, even though some people go on the internet, click and buy a car, which to me is a little nutty, but I'm not in that segment. I want to see the car. I want to drive the car. Some people just click and buy. So for durable goods, typically personal selling. Convenience goods, like snacks and cereals, tend to use advertising and sales promotion. You don't use a lot of personal selling there. Both types, if you have something new, can use public relations. Hey, here's our new product. Here's our new feature. Come talk about us. Seasonal products use advertising and sales promotion both. So when you see, again, that how many people like cranberry sauce? How many people had cranberry sauce at their Thanksgiving dinner? How many people buy cranberry sauce in the middle of summer? I don't even think about it in the middle of summer, but I want it. So we use advertising to remind you, hey, we're here, and sometimes you might actually have a coupon for it too at that time of year. Higher-priced products usually need personal selling because of the risk that consumers associate with the purchase, so they want to know that they're getting a good deal. Most people don't buy a house off the internet. They want to talk to a real estate agent. There are different channel strategies that you can use to get your message out. One approach is a pull strategy. You're going to direct your promotional mix out to the ultimate consumer. You're going to encourage them to ask the retailer for the product. Have you ever gone in a store, you want a thing, and they haven't carried it yet? And you say, hey, I'd like that thing. Has that happened to you? For me, it actually happened a long time ago when I was still a young bachelor. That was a very long time ago. And my freezer was filled with microwavable dinners. Yeah, ever see something like that? My wife, my girlfriend then, who became my fiance, laughed when she saw my freezer. The point is, it was a new TV dinner out, and it sounded really good. I went to my local grocery store and said, hey, I want that one. They said, meh, what? I said, no, it's out, I want it. Eventually they carried it. So here, the flow of communication was down to me, the ultimate consumer. And the way it's supposed to work is we have demand for the retailer who says to the wholesaler, hey, get me some of this stuff. And the manufacturer gets the product down the channel. A push strategy is the other approach. Here we're going to direct our promotional mix to channel members to gain their cooperation in ordering the product, stocking the product, sending it down the channel, getting it on the shelves for the consumer. So here's the idea of the flow of the promotion, personal selling down to the wholesaler, from the wholesaler down to the retailer, putting it on the store shelves for the consumer. So that's the way we flow our message and our product as well. So push or pull, depends on what works in your situation. So how are we going to do this? Well, you can't do anything until you know your intended target market. STP. Anybody remember any of those three letters? S? Segmentation. T? Target marketing. P? Positioning through promotion. Position the product. You can't do any of that stuff until you know who your target audience is. Marketing, identifying and satisfying consumers' needs, wants, and values. So you start with the target audience, and then you mull over how you're going to reach them. What's the best way to do it? One way to think about that is through the hierarchy of effects approach to doing your promotion. The notion is that consumers go through a series of steps to buying your product, starting with initial awareness and out eventually to the eventual action, either trying the product or adopting the product. So once you understand your target audience, you can then use advertising to build awareness with that target audience. Ah, you exist. Then build interest. So Mio exists. Interest might be the idea that they have different flavors and they're portable and they carry everywhere. Evaluation might be to compare it to that old bad, plain-tasting water that you have, and this would be much better. Trial might be a sense-off offer. So, hey, try this thing with this coupon. Give it a try. And then over to adoption where they actually spend their own hard-earned money in it. If this is the approach you take, you can see that you would generate different messages to move people along through that hierarchy to buy the product. Budget. We talked about how much do you have to spend, but there are different approaches to setting your budget. One is to allocate the budget as a percent of past sales or as a percent of forecasted sales. This is pretty simple. We're going to set our marketing budget at 12% of sales. And that's pretty simple to do, right? So we know what our sales were, and we set it as 12% of sales. And when sales go up, what happens to our ad budget? It goes up. Now you got to follow the next step of logic here. When sales go down, what happens to your budget? It goes down. I got to ask you what you think your ad is doing. You don't think your ad is generating new sales? So when your sales go down, your ad budget goes down. I do have some problems with that logic. Many companies do that. Competitive parity budgeting. So you allocate your funds, your marketing funds, based on the competition. You try to match their promotion dollars based on what you understand from industry surveys, et cetera, what they're spending. Or you set your budget to be the same proportion of market share. You're not as big as they are. You have 10% of the market share they do. You're going to spend 10% of the ad dollars that they do. Also called matching competitors, share of market budgeting, or other terms for this. Oftentimes, especially if we're a small business, we use the all-you-can-afford budgeting method. Here we allocate as much as you can to your marketing communication program once you cover all your other budget items. It's not necessarily the most logical approach, but it's all you can do as a small business. The objective and task budgeting approach is probably the most rational, probably the least used because it's so rational. First of all, ask yourself, what are your promotion objectives? Are they to build awareness? Are they to persuade? Are they to get people to buy? What is your objectives? Then ask yourself, what does it take to accomplish these objectives? And then build your budget to accomplish the goals and objectives you need to do. Far too rational. We don't see enough people using that approach. So how much are people spending on advertising? Well, here's global advertising expenditure forecasts. 2020 was admittedly a discouraging year for global advertising. 2021 proved to be a better year in the world of advertising. Looking ahead, this source, eMarketer, estimates that growth in the media and ad spending will continue over the years. So here's how much they think will be spent. $651 billion in 2020, $781 billion in 2021, $866 billion in 2022, and up the line. Of course, forecasts are often wrong, but they see media ad spending growing globally over time. Digital advertising surpassed TV ad spending for the first time in 2016, because that's where the audience is going. That reflects the media preference habits of your audience. And digital advertising counts for over half of all U.S. dollars spent. So obviously you want to think about digital for your ad campaign. Who spends money in the U.S. last year? Amazon, $6.8 billion. Comcast, $5.2 billion. AT&T, $4.8 billion. And Procter & Gamble out of Cincinnati, Ohio, $4.7 billion. Rounding out the top 10, Walt Disney, Verizon, Charter Communications, American Express, Google, Alphabet, and Walmart down to $2.4 billion. So there's a lot of money being spent out there. Presumably they think it's worth it. How much should you spend on your integrated marketing communication? Well, one approach is to use the promotion to sales ratio. How much in sales dollars do you get for every promotion dollar you spend? So that ratio, as you can see, is your total promotional expenditure in dollars divided by your total sales in dollars times 100. And you would compare your ratio results to the industry to see, again, based on industry research, to see how you're doing. If you have a lower ratio compared to the industry at large, you're doing better. Why? Because a lower ratio means you're getting more bang for your buck, more sales for your promotional dollars than is the competition. So that's one way to sort of see objectively how you're doing. How much in sales do you get for every dollar spent on promotion? And lower ratio is better. So now we're going to think about our program, and we're going to have to select that appropriate mix of advertising, personal selling, sales promotion, public relations, and direct marketing to reach the ultimate consumer. How you integrate these things depend on, well, things we've talked about, what you're promoting, the expectation and preferences of your potential consumers, their media exposure habits, general market conditions. Are we going into a recession? Is inflation really high? And, of course, duh, your promotional budget. These are going to drive how you integrate these elements. There is no one best way to do this integrated marketing communication. So you want the best answer? I can't tell you what it is. It depends entirely on these factors. Your consumers, your competition, your market conditions, what you're trying to accomplish. There's no one best way to do it. So then you'll design and schedule your promotional program, execute and assess the program to see how well you did. This example is not important enough to go to. It is a simple example in your lecture notes, and I'm not going to test you on it. So if you're interested in seeing how a small business might make this work, you can go with that. But it's not important enough for me to talk about. So let's move on to the other topic that this chapter covers, direct marketing. Direct marketing is a promotional alternative that uses direct communication with consumers to generate a specific response, an order, a request for further information, a visit to a retail outlet. A key element of this approach is the call for a response, a call to action, and that is trackable and measurable. I'm not asking you to like me. I'm not asking you to remember me. I'm not asking you to connect me with nature and love. I want you to come to my website and buy a product. I want you to put your name in for a brochure. I want you to do a specific thing. And it's a particular way of thinking about doing promotion. The most common forms of direct marketing are internet marketing, face-to-face marketing, direct mail, catalogs, telemarketing, direct response advertising, and kiosk marketing. And during the COVID era, there was a lot more interest in direct marketing, getting a response from the consumers right now. I told you about my wife and catalogs. My wife went on a short vacation, as she likes to do, and if you were married to me, you'd want to take a vacation too. And this was actually not in the holiday season. This was over the summer. And those are the catalogs that showed up during her short vacation. Lots of people use direct marketing via catalogs to get a direct response from the consumer. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a thing out there. So if you're contacting the consumer directly, how effective is it? Well, you can see we have response rates on the left-hand side to direct mail, catalogs, email, telephone, inserts, and magazine and newspaper ads. How many of you guys, when you pick up the Sunday newspaper, if you still get it, have a whole bunch of inserts that just fall out onto the floor and you recycle them? Anybody have that? Yeah, you don't look at them. They're just gone. That's a tough way to direct market your product. So its response rate is not very good, 0.11%. Direct mail, 2.1%. So email has the lowest cost per order, $3.88, and the lowest promotional cost percent. So email is still a way to get information out, especially in the B2B world. For inserts, all those things that fall out of your newspaper, the response rate is so low at 0.11% that the low cost per thousand really doesn't matter that much. It's just not all that effective, although it's still used. Print has a low promotion cost percent at 5.5. Look at the average order value for print. It's driven by the high, its high average order value is driven because a lot of print stuff deals with financial services. And so when you get an order off of these things, it's often a high value financial service response. Telephone is the highest cost per order at $43.70 cost per order because, well, people don't answer the phone. Again, that's not worth going over to in detail. It just tells you the cost of advertising nationally by medium. It's in your lecture notes. So, direct marketing can result in actual orders. That, of course, is the focus of a direct marketing approach. We're not changing your attitudes. We're getting you to buy. Or, if it's the sort of thing, hey, click on this site, give me your information to request this catalog, request this white paper. It can be a lead generator. Email is the winner for lead generation. It produces the highest response rate at the fraction of the cost compared to other options. Inserts and direct mail have the lowest rate of conversion of leads to sales, which we just saw in that previous chart. We can actually use direct marketing to generate traffic to our store or to our website. So sending direct mail to that select audience, you know who they are because they're in your mail list, generates traffic. We get it writing? Obviously, I'm scampering along here. This was an actual example from a while ago where I did pay attention to a insert in my Sunday paper. So this was nicely printed with this nice script printing, a 5 1/4 by 7 1/4 sealed green envelope, had 6 words of coffee, a special invitation just for you in my Sunday paper. It was an upscale piece. It did stand out. It looked out of place among most of the colorful, glossy marketing sheets and mini catalogs. So I actually did open the thing. When you open it up, it doesn't show up here. This was a silver, glossy invitation, white copy reversed out on a silver background by the marketing folks from DirecTV. And the message was all of this stuff. We'd like to offer you this special invitation to it. Don't miss your chance to get the best entertainment and the best savings. Call the number. Start enjoying it now. Do it right away is the logic. Hurry. This time is only offered for a short time. Act today. I didn't act because I didn't want DirecTV. But the point is, they got my attention with a direct message and a call to do something. There is trade and, trade magazines that talk about this stuff. So here's the power of direct marketing. Data in this entity is broken down by channel, industry, and business model. So if direct marketing is the way you want to go, you can find information on direct mail, non-catalog, direct mail catalog, telemarketing, email, internet display advertising, search engine marketing, social network sites, other internet, mobile, direct response, TV, radio, magazines, newspaper, direct response, insert media, in 52 major industry groups, 51 geographic regions, 4 intended purpose categories, direct order, lead generation, retail purchase, fundraising, and 2 major markets, B2C and B2B. So direct marketing is sort of a big thing among a certain subset of people. The guy I mentioned earlier, David Ogilvy, was a big proponent of direct marketing. He was born in England. In 1948, founded an agency in New York that led to the world of advertising with his scientific research on the market and consumers. And he said, in the advertising community today, there are 2 worlds, the direct response advertising world, direct marketing, and the world of general advertising. These 2 worlds are on a collision course. The general advertisers and their agencies know almost nothing for sure. In direct advertising, I see knowledge and reality. In general advertising, I see ignorance. He had a pretty strong opinion on this whole thing and built an agency around it. Not everybody in the world only believes in direct response advertising, but there is an organization out there that will get you on board with it if direct marketing is the way you want to go. Obviously, I'm skipping stuff and moving quickly because I feel badly about getting through the end material, although I think we're doing okay. I'm not going to force you into the next chapter in the remaining 6 minutes, even though I should. So we're going to have 6 minutes off to catch your breath after my fast talking. This is the end of the material for mini test 13. That test will be up tomorrow, yeah? Have a good day. See you then. I should make them do another chapter, don't you think?